What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the WWE on Fox Raw Roundup. I'm your host, Ryan Satin, and as you can hear, my voice sounds like absolute crap right now. I apologize for that. I was a little sick over the weekend. Wasn't COVID or anything like that. Don't freak out. But I was coughing so much, and it ruined my voice. Hopefully, I can get through this whole podcast, so bear with me. First, before we get into my thoughts on Raw, I want to give a little love to the color Mike, who gave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, saying, "This is one of my favorite podcasts. Not only does Ryan interview guests out of character every week, but he also does reviews the day after SmackDowns and Raws. He also does great preview shows for PLEs. Keep up the great work, Ryan. You certainly give me things to look forward to on my drives to work. Michael from Michigan." Michael from Michigan, thank you so much for saying that. Appreciate it. That last part where you said, "give you things to look forward to on your drives to work," makes me very happy because I work very hard on all this stuff. And sometimes when you're doing that and you don't get a lot of feedback from the world at large, you're not sure what people quite think of what you're doing. So it's good to hear there are people like you who look forward to listening to these podcasts every week. It means a lot to me. Now let's get into Raw. I would do a longer opening, but I can barely speak, so I should use my time wisely. A reunited Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn came out first to a thunderous reaction. Sami said it feels real good to be on the same page again. That they always used each other to get to the next level in their careers, but they did it as brothers, and it's great to be back at that point again. Kevin says that he's always been Sami's biggest fan, and he couldn't take seeing Sami stay under Roman's thumb by choice when it was clear he was bigger than the whole group the entire time. But now it's time to take down the bloodline together. The Usos made their way to the ring after this, and KO challenged them to a tag title match at WrestleMania. Jimmy, you and your brother versus me and mine, Sami Zayn. Jay eventually accepts on behalf of their team, saying that this will be their one shot to put this problem in the dirt. Sami and KO, then they rush in for a brawl. Sami and KO got the upper hand. The Usos grabbed chairs from ringside, but then Roman was shown arriving to the building, and so the Usos relented and walked to the back. This was fantastic. I saw the dumbest take on social media this weekend. Where a former WWE writer said that the hug moment should have been saved for WrestleMania, that was their big moment, and it was ruined by not being done at WrestleMania. Dumbest take I've read in a while. The crowd went insane, and you needed that moment to get to the tag title match. It's almost like the person who said that hasn't been watching the shows. You needed that moment to get to the match. They had to get back on the same page again. And the WrestleMania moment, numbskull, is when they win the tag titles and end the Usos' legendary reign and do it together as brothers on the same page again. Like, do people watch the shows? I swear. As for this whole thing, I'm glad we finally get the match. It was made official later in the show. The Usos versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. And what I really like about this is I think that more than anything, besides the story being as good as it is and just, you know, everything that we've said along the path to get here, I think one thing that just makes me so happy about all this, wherever it lands on the card, whatever happens going forward, I think that for too long, tag team wrestling on the main roster hasn't been looked at as something that could be the most engaging story in the entire company. It could be the best match from higher ups, not from the fans. There wasn't a lot of respect put on tag team wrestling, it felt, on the main roster. At times, yes, but as a whole, no. And to see that the first WrestleMania under Triple H's creative direction, to see the first WrestleMania under his creative direction, to see that the number one story heading into it, the story that has people most excited, the story that people are most interested in, the match people are most excited about, is centered around the tag team titles. That's huge. That's a big difference than what we've seen in the past. So I'm happy to see that so much work has been put into making this tag title match feel important. It was great also to see Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens on the same page again. It's like, if you've ever had a friend where sometimes you guys fall out of friendship, but you know how close you are, it's such a relatable story. And to see them like friends again, joking around, reminds you of the good times. So I liked this a lot. I liked this whole opening segment. I like seeing Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens back together again, and I'm excited for this tag title match. Next. My voice. I'm trying, guys. Next. Oh, it's only segment two. Next, Austin Theory versus Montez Ford. And Montez Ford continued to look like a star in this one. The crowd so badly wants to see him ascend to that next level. I do too. He's just such a good guy. He's got so much personality. He's so entertaining in the ring. He's just someone that you can so easily get behind. You can so easily want to see this guy succeed. Just, you know, it's like one of us, but filled with an insane amount of talent and potential. And so I really enjoy this. Theory eventually won with the 8-town down and got the clean win ahead of his upcoming bout with Cena at WrestleMania. My only real complaint here would be that I wish it hadn't been such a clean victory over Montez. The people are really into him right now. And since I think he should be the next U.S. champion when that time comes, it would have been nice if he had been given a less decisive loss here. That being said, I know you need to keep Theory strong heading into a match with Cena. So there was really no choice in the matter here. They kind of booked themselves into a corner with what they did. Montez is someone who is clearly on the cusp of that next level, is clearly ready for something bigger. So I didn't love him losing so easily. That's my only thing, because wins and losses do matter. And when you see someone lose to Theory that quickly, it almost makes you think that you shouldn't be behind this guy, who we all firmly are behind, but it almost sends the message like, well, it's not worth doing that for. Look what happens. When he gets opportunity against Roman, he loses. When he gets an opportunity against Theory, he loses. And in the Elimination Chamber, he loses. So I just, yes, competitiveness helps too, but wins and losses also matter, and you got to be protective of those things. After the match, Theory got on the mic, and he said, John, you don't believe in me, but at WrestleMania, you will. I liked all this. I liked the serious coming out of Theory. I like the little bit of a push we're getting from Montez Ford. I think it's important to make Theory look as strong as possible before a match against a guy like John Cena. So, all in all, I get why all the decisions were made in this match. I just kind of wish it hadn't have been Montez Ford losing. I don't know. Maybe you could have put someone else there. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how this plays out post-WrestleMania. Back in the Bloodline locker room, Roman doesn't seem thrilled about what happened to the Usos earlier. He then tells everyone to leave the room except Jay as the show goes to commercial. And when we return, Roman questions Jay's allegiances. And Jay promises he's Bloodline. Roman says he hopes so. Then lets Jay know he loves him. And Heyman returns after this asking if Roman has found the answers he was looking for. And Reigns says yes. A necessary part of the story considering what we had seen before and we hadn't seen any interaction between Jay and Roman since Jay returned to the Bloodline. Of course, you can't help but think of Roman's probably in the back of his mind wondering if Jay's a sleeper cell all along, especially from what everyone keeps telling him. Cody Rhodes later in the night as well. But all of this does seem to be getting to Roman, and I think that if the plan is for Roman Reigns to lose the title at WrestleMania, a lot of these things need to kind of like be in his mind. He is kind of losing it mentally. He is losing his bloodline. He does want to make sure everyone's on his same page still. But I think that with what we heard at the end of the show and what we kind of know, I think everyone knows if he doesn't have those titles, the bloodline does not stand strong, and the Usos will probably likely leave him. So you can understand why his character would want to make sure that Jay once again reaffirms the fact that he's on the side of the bloodline. Next, we had an interview with Adam Pearce that got interrupted by Chelsea Green, who tried to force her way into the showcase tag match at WrestleMania with Piper Niven as her partner. And then, since Carmella can't wrestle apparently now, it's going to be Piper Niven and Chelsea Green versus Bianca Belair and Asuka later in the night. First, we got Omos versus Mustafa Ali, and before the match, there was a cool video package hyping the size of Brock and Omos in comparison to each other. This was a quick squash that Omos won with his two-handed choke slam. And after the match, MVP got on the mic saying Omos fears no one, but Brock will learn to fear Omos at WrestleMania. What I liked most about this was definitely the video package beforehand. I like when things feel a little different. And even if it was kind of like a Royal Rumble by the numbers type video, but like, actually, that's not a fair comparison. It was much more of like a tale of the tape on video, but just like beefed up. And I did like it. You know, the facts that they were saying did sound like, did make both guys sound like huge beasts of people. You know, Brock's UFC glove size being the biggest, you know, and a bunch of other stats they said about Omos. I liked it. It was just different. Different is good. I like when it doesn't feel like the same thing that we've seen a million times. And that certainly was not the case with this. It felt unique, and it did actually make the WrestleMania match sound even cooler, because you're like, man, these are two big-ass dudes. That's going to be awesome. Didn't love the squash itself. I'm so confused to what they're doing with Ali and Dolph Ziggler. They've had this like thing going on in the background for a minute now, and I really don't understand where it's going. There's a lot of things that don't seem to be factoring into Mania that are just kind of like simmering on the side. And I don't know. I'm confused as like why they're choosing certain things to focus on. And I'm hoping that, those become more evident by the time we get to WrestleMania. But like, this Mustafa Ali versus Dolph Ziggler thing has just kind of like been happening, but like nothing's really been happening with it. It's just kind of like been a thing on the side. And I don't know if they've done enough to really get me invested in whatever it is this is going to become. I'm also a little disappointed that it seems like whatever they were doing with the Hurt Business has also been kind of put on the back burner ahead of WrestleMania. I thought it was going to culminate at a big show, but now it feels like there's not even a tease of it anymore. Like, we had MVP managing Cedric and Shelton again. Now there's nothing to it. You know, we had Nikki, who was stalking Candace, and doesn't really feel like that's going anywhere anymore. I don't know. There's just like little things that seem to be getting dropped that I'm like, we're starting and stopped, that don't need to be, that don't need to be part of the road to WrestleMania, or things that, I don't know. I'm a little confused on some of the undercard heading into WrestleMania, and some of these things that I was invested in or I was interested in that they had my attention on that just seemed to be dropped. I don't love that. Miz creeps up on Logan Paul in the hallway after this and asks if he's gonna be the guest on Impulsive tonight. But Logan turns him down en route to the ring. Hold on, I'm taking a sip of water so my voice sounds a tiny bit better. I gotta lubricate it. 1 second. Not much better. Okay. So then Logan comes out for Impulsive and gets a big boo from the crowd. Logan finally just goes full-blown heel on the crowd. Says the reality is he doesn't have to be here, but he's in the WWE because he loves it. But sadly, the WWE fans don't seem to love him. Says the only two people who do in the building are probably his dad and the guy with the Prime Drink sign, who I follow on Instagram and can confirm is a big fan of Logan Paul. He's a magician. named Jared Myers, and the guy loves pro wrestling, listens to this podcast, listens to Out of Character. He's a nice guy, so it was cool to see him on camera for that. But I can confirm that Logan is right. That guy definitely is a big fan of Logan Paul. But there was other people in the crowd with Logan Paul signs, too. However, Logan just really went heel on everyone. He said no matter what he does, though, WWE Universe isn't going to respect him, and he no longer cares. Because it's not his fault that we as fans refuse to see the talent standing in front of us. Says that's the reason he didn't invite a WWE guest on the show tonight, because he can do it all himself, and he wouldn't want to invite one of his celebrity friends to St. Louis either. Crowd goes ham over that. Logan starts showing the Seth Rollins knockout video on repeat, and then his mic starts to cut out. We then see Rollins in the truck as the one messing with things, and he plays his music to walk out to the ring. Rather than having further words, though, Rollins tackles Logan to the ground, and backstage officials run out to break things up. Seth dives off the top rope onto security, then gets up, takes a knockout punch from Logan, goes down, and Logan walks away. Good to see Logan Paul has finally realized the money is in him being a heel in WWE. I know in the past he said he wanted to be a babyface, but this is how you draw with that guy. People want to see the Paul brothers get beat up. Whether that happens or not is the allure of those guys on pay-per-view. That's what people pay money to see when it comes to the Paul brothers. Yes, they have their own fan base, a big fan base of people that actually like them. I don't dislike the Paul brothers, but even me, I like, you know, they're good at talking trash. That's been like their thing this whole time. That's what got them over on pay-per-view and boxing and stuff, was they're really good at talking trash. And everyone watches to see if they can back it up. We got Logan Paul as a babyface already. Seeing him as a heel in this light, this is what I wanted to see him from day one. This is why WWE was interested in him. Because this is the guy that is a draw on pay-per-view. The guy who you want to see if his mouth can back up. The guy you want to see if he can back up everything that his mouth says. That's what you enjoy out of these Paul brothers. So I'm glad that's the Logan Paul we're finally getting heading into WrestleMania. I think that leaning into what the, you know, fans would say about him is a wise decision. Especially if you want, you know, people to tune in to see how he's going to do. Like, we've seen how he did against Roman Reigns. We've seen how he did against The Miz. I just think that those matches, the thing that made those matches interesting was you wanted to see, the first one you wanted to see if Logan Paul could wrestle. The second one you wanted to see if he could keep up with Roman Reigns. But I think that wouldn't have lasted with this one. I don't think it would have been a good allure for this one. I think what's better is the crap talking, the like get the riling the fans up and being like, this guy doesn't care about wrestling, after he's already shown us that he actually does, so that it's okay to go there with him and it doesn't ruin how he's going to be viewed. Instead, you play into that notion that was thought of before, now that we know he is dedicated to this. And you really dig hard into it of like, this guy's not one of us. This guy doesn't belong. This guy shouldn't be here. And because of that, he's going to have massive boos at WrestleMania. And it's going to add so much to their match. I also feel like they're signaling too strong that Seth is going to win. And that's why Logan gets to keep knocking Seth Rollins out. You know, so he still looks strong as well. But I'm just really enjoying all of this. I think that this is up there with one of the most well-built-up WrestleMania matches so far on the card. There's three of them. Roman Reigns versus Cody, the tag title match, which I referenced earlier, and Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul. Dominic Mysterio versus Johnny Gargano took place after that. Dominic won this one with a frog splash from the top rope to the injured ribs of Gargano. And after the match, Dominik says he's not going to stop until he gets the match with Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania. And he's also learned the whole Mysterio family is going to be at SmackDown this week. So he thinks he's finally figured out how to get the match he wants. And that's by asking his mom in person himself this week on SmackDown. First, before I get to that, I want to talk about Johnny Gargano. I'm just not happy with what they are doing with Johnny Gargano. I don't get it. He had such a big comeback. And now he's just like losing clean for no reason. And wrestling at TakeOver instead of on a WWE show at WrestleMania. I don't know, man. I don't love it. I'm like a huge Johnny Gargano guy. And I think he could be doing so much more on the main roster. He's much more than a comedy act. Guy's one of the best. I mean, guy's put on some of the best matches that were ever happened in NXT. Can't we do something a little better for him? I'm not trying to be like a negative Nancy here, but like, geez, man, like, this is the best you can do with Johnny Gargano heading into WrestleMania? He had one of the biggest returns. Like, it was a big deal when he came back. And it's just like, each week that goes by, there's like less and less importance on everything he's doing. And his place on the card just keeps getting lower and lower. And it just, I can't say I completely understand what's going on with Johnny Gargano. You know what? Let me take a quick commercial break. And then I'll get back to the Rey Mysterio Dominik stuff. As for the Dominik Rey Mysterio stuff, this is what I was asking for. If you listen to my SmackDown roundup, I talked about how I'd need this to be taken to the next level. I think it had kind of like felt like we were seeing the same segment over and over again as much as I was enjoying them. But I was ready for things to, you know, get kicked up a notch. And now we finally see that that's what's going to happen on SmackDown this week. I think a lot of people were guessing that if it wasn't just the Hall of Fame ceremony that gets, you know, an attack at the Hall of Fame ceremony that gets Rey Mysterio to say yes to the match, that it would obviously have to include Angie Mysterio, the mom, and maybe even Aaliyah, the daughter, who we've seen both of them on WWE TV before. But at what lengths is Dominik willing to go to get this match? And what's he willing to do towards his mother? That's going to be interesting. That could get real messy on SmackDown this week. So I'm looking forward to that. And honestly, if they agree to the match beforehand, it's not the end of the world. It's not the worst thing to do rather than doing it at the Hall of Fame ceremony, because that way you kind of keep the Hall of Fame ceremony as like a storyline-free area, which I can understand them wanting to do to keep it as an important event. So I wouldn't hate this getting agreed upon beforehand, because I think that ultimately it will... Ultimately, like, we've run its course on just waiting. Yes, there's only a week left until WrestleMania, basically. But I would like to see that match get agreed upon in, like, I need to see Dominik do something real bad to get Rey Mysterio to agree with that match to fit the rest of the storyline. So I'm glad that it seems like we're finally going to get that on SmackDown this week. So Paul Heyman informs the Usos after this that they have the rest of the night off to indulge on the private jet. But Solo needs to stay back with Roman Reigns. Edge then cuts an ominous promo in the dark where he invites the demon to join him inside of Hell in a Cell at WrestleMania. I think we all figured that's where this was going. What did I think about this promo? I felt like it was very wordy. It was very wordy. It wasn't like a babyface promo. Like, Edge doesn't... It was very much like the character he was playing at the beginning of this Judgment Day thing, which I don't know if everybody was super into. So I think that... Sorry, my fan was so loud. It was making a noise. I had to turn it off for a second. I didn't love this. I wanted to love it. I wanted to like it. But I felt like it wasn't a very babyface promo. It wasn't the character that we've really seen Edge playing since he's been a babyface. I honestly think I would have preferred Finn doing this and then them cutting in and out of shots of the demon and stuff so that it's continuing the Balor to tease the appearance of the demon rather than Edge inviting the demon. The thought process behind a lot of this, I didn't get. I didn't get Edge acting like a heel. I've been very confused on a lot of the heel face dynamics heading into WrestleMania. And this was one of them where I was like, yeah, I don't think this really fit. I mean, I get that because it's Hell in a Cell, quote unquote, they want to get, you know, dark with it, but he kind of just looked like the Bohemian Rhapsody video where it was like just a black background and their heads, you know, like talking in the light. And it didn't like look, I don't know, it didn't like intimidate me. It just felt like someone was writing a very wordy poem. I don't know. But normally I like just wordy promos, but it just, I don't know. I couldn't really pinpoint what I didn't like about it, but I just like was really not into this. Yeah. So then we had Rhea Ripley out next. Says Charlotte didn't respect her 3 years ago, and she's not sure she ever will, because she makes her question the respect Charlotte has for herself. Says Charlotte's time is done, she's washed, it's over, and you have to go home. And without the WWE, you're nothing, quote. At WrestleMania, I will become a champion, and I will be the biggest star here in WWE and Charlotte. When you see me holding your crown above your head, you're going to know that all your insecurities are true. I don't need you to respect me, but you will fear me. Surprisingly, Rhea gets interrupted by Damage Control, who say they do respect Rhea, and if she needed advice on how to beat Charlotte, she could have just asked. Rhea says she doesn't need any help from anyone, which angered Bayley. So Bayley challenged her to a match, and it became official. Before I get to that match, actually, no, let me get through this match first, actually. I take that back. So the match itself, we had Rhea Ripley versus Bayley. Rhea Ripley attempted to hit the Riptide, but Damage Control distracted the ref, and the numbers advantage helped Bayley take control. Becky Lynch's music hit after that, and she walked out with Lita, Trish, and a bag of popcorn. Bayley hesitated on a sunset flip into the corner and paid for it by getting kicked in the neck and then locked in the standing cloverleaf. The babyfaces then helped distract Damage Control and it allowed Rhea to get the win. So, let's talk about this a little bit. Is Rhea supposed to be a babyface? Because she's been a heel for a while now. And this was confusing to me because it's like the heel team is coming out to confront the heel. And then they get the better of her as heels. So I'm like, I don't get what's going on here. Why are the babyfaces helping Rhea, who's been a heel this whole time? Why do the heels, who previously were cool with Rhea, now suddenly taking issue with Rhea? And then I think when I was piecing all this together in my mind, I think it actually helped me pinpoint my problem with the build to Rhea versus Charlotte. And I think it's that Rhea is being treated like the face, when in reality the face was supposed to be Charlotte. If you go back, you know, a little bit, when Charlotte came back and won the title, she'd been a babyface. We were talking about how good she was doing as a babyface. And Rhea was a heel in the Royal Rumble. But ever since they've started the actual build of Rhea and Charlotte, the way both characters are talking, Rhea's talking more like a babyface, and Charlotte's talking more like her old heel self. And I think because of that, it's created this disjointed story that I'm finding hard to get invested in. Because Rhea is saying things like, I want to be the biggest star. I got to get through you. These are all things babyfaces say to want to get to the top of the company. So I think that's the disconnect with me here. Is like, I enjoyed the segment last week on SmackDown. I enjoy both performers immensely. But the story itself doesn't make a lot of sense in the way it's being done. It's positioning Rhea to be the babyface. And I'm guessing it's because, you know, obviously they know the people are waiting for her star-making moment. But she can still have that star-making moment as a heel. And if you're going the other way with it, it's confusing because Dom's a heel, Balor's a heel, Priest's a heel, Judgment Day are heels. But ever since Rhea won the Royal Rumble, she's been acting like a babyface in only her program with Charlotte. That doesn't make a lot of sense, right? Am I tripping? Am I just sick? I don't know. You guys tell me. Is my sick brain making me grumpy? I can't decide. Next, Gable finds Otis backstage and says he needs him in his corner tonight. Maxine says she also needs Otis for something, and an argument ensues. But Otis eventually chooses to back Gable tonight. So then we got Ricochet with Braun Strowman versus Chad Gable with Otis. Gable stopped a Frankensteiner attempt and then lifted Ricochet up into a fireman's carry-like toss from the top rope. That looked awesome. Maxine Dupree made her way to ringside near the end and asked Otis to come to the back with her. Otis did just that and distracted Gable long enough to allow Ricochet to gain his composure and inevitably get the win with a shooting star press. Felt like this was a good way of adding some interest to the Fatal 4-Way tag match at WrestleMania, especially considering the match was just kind of thrown out there. And I'm wondering how Maximum Male Models end up factoring into this tag match at WrestleMania. I think wrestling is good when it's a bit of a buffet, and this Otis Maximum Male Model stuff has been pretty fun. I also enjoy how their matches against the OC keep getting postponed for reasons that are so stupid. I forget what it was, somebody's cheekbones this week, like overextended his cheekbones or something. Masse. But I'm I do, you know, I think that ultimately, if you're invested in the story and you want to know where it's going, then everything is going right. And I do want to know where this is going. I've found it entertaining so far, so I like it. And I felt like this, you know, I'm not going to complain about getting Ricochet versus Chad Gable, two immensely talented performers, them getting any time to mix it up in the ring and show their creativity is a win in my book. So then we got Bianca Belair and Asuka versus Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. This was your classic case of can they coexist, which I'm never a fan of. Bianca eventually got the win for her time by hitting, got the win for her team, excuse me, by hitting the KOD on Piper Niven. And then after the match, Asuka took Bianca Belair down with a kick and a sliding knee and then stood in the middle of the ring dancing. Listen to my sighing over here. I just know I've sounded so negative this episode, and I wouldn't have expected myself to sound so negative in the build of WrestleMania. But what was this? Like, this was classic, like, what used to happen that people would complain about. Like the whole can they coexist thing. Why would they coexist? Why? What point would it... In a logical sense, why would they need to coexist? Why would you want to coexist? You're going to wrestle this person for the title in a huge match at WrestleMania in 2 weeks. Why? There's literally no reason for the characters to want to coexist. And then when Asuka does the turn at the end, after it being like a question of, is she a bad guy now or is she a good guy? Or villain or babyface. Excuse me. It was so lackluster, the turn. Like, it wasn't really even dastardly. It was just kind of like, oh, she did that because she's kooky or she's weird or wild and she's playing mind games. But, like, at this point with the whole will they or won't they be friends thing, which I already wasn't loving, to do something as weak as that to get people invested in their WrestleMania match, I'm just not pumped on it. I don't know. I hate to be so negative. I was really hoping that we were going to get something good here. Like, maybe even just Asuka just annihilating Bianca Belair. Not even letting the match start. Just destroying her. So that Asuka's like, you know, excuse me, so that Bianca Belair's like in a cast heading into WrestleMania or something. I don't know. Put some heat on this. One kick? One little knee? No. No, it's WrestleMania, man, for the women's title. The Raw Women's Championship. It's Bianca Belair, who's one of your pillars of the company right now. I think that a little more thought should have been put into this story. Because Asuka and Bianca Belair are two of the most talented women on the entire roster. So I'm a little bummed at how not invested I am in this story. And this didn't save that at all. And there's only 1 week left to WrestleMania. So let's see what happens with 1 week to go. Finally, to finish out the night, Roman Reigns made his entrance with Paul Heyman and Solo Sikoa. After telling the crowd to acknowledge him, Cody Rhodes interrupts to make his entrance and to confront the tribal chief in the ring. Cody says he's heard the warning to stay out of the Bloodline's personal business. So we'd love it if Roman could define what they mean by the Cody Rhodes problem. Reigns says, Cody isn't the problem. What he represents is the problem. He's what we used to be. He's like our fathers. He's a professional wrestler. Says Cody ran away and started a promotion he couldn't get over in. Said Cody ran away and started a promotion he couldn't get over in. So he ran back to the WWE and got over. And then his body gave out on him. You're not cut out for this. You're not finishing any story. He then said on April 3rd, when Cody wakes up, he's going to have to look in the mirror and deal with adversity again. Otherwise, he'll do what he always does and run away like a little biatch. Cody says if you followed his story, you'll know that what Roman is saying right now is true. But what he did while he was away was help everyone in the locker room make more money. And as far as being a professional wrestler like their fathers, maybe that's true. Maybe he is just a violent, likes the taste of blood in his mouth professional wrestler. Also says if he hears his father's name one more time from all these people, it will make him puke. Because the only thing you'll see at WrestleMania is him. He then talks about what it will mean for Roman on April 3rd when he wakes up and remembers what it was like to lose. And when that happens, Jay is going to leave you, and then Jimmy will leave you too. So no Usos, and then Solo leaves too. When Solo leaves you, Heyman becomes an advocate again, and you'll be a man without a family. A Roman with no more reigns, a chief without a tribe. Roman doesn't know what to say to this and leaves Cody alone with Solo. Rhodes gets in Solo's face and tells Solo to say when. Roman looks pissed about Solo staying back and orders him to come back and leave with him, but Cody calls Solo out for not being ready. Solo goes to attack Cody and gets a super kick for his troubles, and then Roman stops Solo from continuing the attack, and the show comes to an end. I loved this. Loved this classic pro wrestling. This is what you want to see from a WrestleMania main event. They don't need to get physical with each other. They're just talking mad crap on the mic. trying to get each other's head, trying to psych each other out, trying to out alpha the other one. And what I've been enjoying so much about this is that for Roman's, you know, 950-day reign or whatever it is, he successfully got into everyone's head, character-wise, that he wrestled against. They even referenced it in a promo recently where it was like they had all these mental strategies and how they were attacking people before they got in the ring so that they had lost before they had even gotten the match because they had already been defeated mentally. And you can see in watching these promos that Cody is clearly the first character to really get Roman off his game, to get back in Roman's head, to not be scared like everybody else was, to not let these quote-unquote mind games work on him. He's ready. He wants that belt. There's nothing that Roman Reigns is going to do to stop him. And I think that because we, as wrestling fans, for so long felt like there wasn't someone who could stand toe-to-toe with Roman like that and believably take the title from him, it's so refreshing to see someone on the other side of the ring as a babyface that can stand face-to-face with Roman Reigns and look like equals. And I realize they're not full equals because Roman Reigns' title reign is a thing of legend. But I'm talking about when it comes to confidence, when it comes to ability to be the guy. You're looking at someone, Roman Reigns for the first time is looking at someone who has that same ability within him. So I love it. I love it. You know, in the past I've talked about on this podcast how I also have appreciated the subtle AEW references to remind the viewer that this is essentially an AEW versus WWE dream match. You got an ex-AEW EVP against WWE's top guy that whole time. I tweeted about that. And I had some responses from people saying that, well, because of this, you got to have Roman Reigns win. You got to have the guy who was the WWE guy win. But I don't think it's that deep. I don't think it's that deep. That's funny. I saw one of the quote tweets says, an actual dream match that Hunter didn't have to label a dream match, but still told the story. Yes. Yes. I hate when it's like, oh, dream match, and that's the build of the match, rather than like making it a dream match based on your story. I don't like being told something's a dream match. It reminds me of like AJ versus Nakamura, you know, it's like, I don't know. I don't like that. I like that this is shown that you're getting that dream match with what people are saying in their words. You know, you're using your words to really drive home the fact that like we're getting the first big AEW versus WWE match here. Like, this is like the invasion for a new generation to some degree. No, it's not, no one bought AEW or WWE or anything like that. But I'm talking about strictly in terms of like the invasion was supposed to be these dream matches. And they weren't necessarily dream matches, but this is definitely that dream match. And I don't think it goes so deep to where you have to have Roman Reigns win because he was the WWE guy. I think it's just, you know, Cody is a WWE guy now. So I don't think it goes that deep to show, like, who was better that whole time. I think that what's this person? I totally disagree. I don't see many people treat this as a dream match. It's a big headline match with intriguing build, but I definitely don't think this is an AEW versus WWE dream match. What? Shut up. I'm looking at the response. What a stupid... This isn't a dream match. It's a big headline match with an intriguing build. What are you talking about? Jared, you're dumb. Going back to my point, I really do think that it's been so well done. Like, this whole storyline has been so on point, and I'm really excited to see how it plays out at WrestleMania. Like, I don't have any complaints about this story. They've done such a good job of transitioning from Sammy and Roman to Cody and Roman, and just every time they've been doing these segments on the road to get there, I think they are making the right decisions. So I said Rhodes, the road to get there. So yeah, I'm happy with it all. I'm going to stop here. I'm kind of rambling and my voice hurts. I'll be back on, the show will be back on Wednesday. We got 100th episode of Out of Character with Stone Cold Steve Austin. It's a shorter one than usual. Only had a little bit of time with him, but we talk about his return to the ring last year at WrestleMania, everything that went into it. We also talk a little bit about what Stone Cold is watching these days, and of course, what his answer is when I ask, was that the last time we're going to see Stone Cold Steve Austin in the ring, or will we see him back in the future? You're going to have to wait and see what he says on this week's Out of Character. Premieres on the WWE on Fox YouTube channel early in the morning, so make sure you're subscribed there, and also on the podcast feed before that. So make sure you're subscribed to this podcast feed and make sure you're following WWE on Fox on social media. All right, that's it. I'm done officially tapping out, as you can hear my voice slowly fading away. I'm Ryan Satin, and this has been another WWE on Fox Raw Roundup.